Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, everyone. This episode of Nothing Major is brought to you by Huel. You have busy mornings. Do you skip breakfast, or is it 10 minutes before a meeting you got nothing to eat? Grab yourself a Huel. I used to be a coffee guy in the morning. Now I'm a Huel guy. When I'm taking the kids to school, no more coffee. I'm just Huel. I've been using the Black Edition powder. It's a complete meal. Not just protein, everyone. 40 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, 27 essential vitamins and minerals. That is a ton of essential vitamins and minerals. No added sugar. It's gluten-free. Costs less than $3 a meal, and it's ready to go in 60 seconds. That's 1 minute. Gives you better focus. Your workouts are phenomenal with this stuff. Keeps you on track for your fall goals. For me, I've got better energy. No crashes during the day, and my mornings are much smoother.
Yeah, for me, I've been on the Daily Greens can. I've got mine every day. I'm crushing the peach hibiscus ones. That's my favorite flavor. It's developed by nutritionists and dietitians. It's good for gut health. It's good for clarity. It's good for anything you need. So for me, when I wake up in the morning, I'm starting with a clean, fresh, refreshing Huel Greens can.
Huel makes healthy eating simple for busy people. Whether you're traveling, working out, doing whatever you're doing, you want to stay on top of your fitness? Huel is the product for you. New customers get 15% off when you spend $75 or more. $75 is not that much. So remember, 15% off if you spend $75 or more. Go to Huel.com/nothingmajor and use our code nothingmajor at checkout. Remember, that's Huel.com/nothingmajor and use our discount code nothingmajor. All right, everyone. On today's episode of Nothing Major, we're going to talk Shanghai. We're going to go over the draw, some Shanghai stories. And also, we have Alex Mikkelsen. He sat down and did an interview with us from Tokyo. So enjoy the episode. All right, everyone. Welcome back. We got Jack, John, Stevie, myself, and the suits at SIFT. We're back. Beijing, Tokyo just ended. We're now on to Shanghai, the second to last Master Series of the year. But before we get into that, we wanted to debate. We were arguing the other day on like what it means. What's it mean in tennis to make it or be a pro? Like, what's your definition? So we wanted to talk about that. Like, I want to start with this. Like, in the NBA, I say you're a pro basketball player if you make it in the NBA. If you're in the D League, are you a professional basketball player? If you're on the Korn Ferry Tour in golf, are you a quote unquote, did you make it as a pro golfer? And so that's kind of where the debate comes. So let me start with Stevie J. Your definition of a pro who has quote unquote made it.
So if you make the G League in basketball, you are not a pro.
Okay.
If you have a 7-figure deal in Europe as a basketball player, you're not a pro.
That's ridiculous.
I agree with you.
That's what I'm asking. I'm asking Sam.
You're asking.
You weren't asking. You were making a statement.
I'm asking Sam. If you have a 7-figure deal in Spain, are you a pro?
That wasn't a question. That was a statement, by the way.
I don't know. This is your time. You answer
the
question. Yes,
dude. If you're making money as a professional athlete, I think you've made it in your sport, because that's like the 0.1 of 0.1% of all athletes. You know, the saying you're a pro thing is like, it is a little more ridiculous, because if you're a tennis player and you're have one ATE point and you go around saying I'm a pro tennis player, I think that's insane.
What's your definition of like, oh, he made it?
I'm saying like making money. If you're a profitable, if you're a profitable athlete, like if you've, you know, I think you've made it, because not everyone can do that, dude. Think about all the people that play as a kid, as a high school, in college, whatever. If you've made money as a athlete, like over the course of your career, I think you've made it. Tennis is tricky, because if you have one futures point, like, and you're ranked 1600, like, can you say you're a pro? Like, I think that's insane. Like, I think that's crazy, because they protect too many people in that regard. And I don't like when people say that, but you know, everybody's definition is different, but I don't think that should be the case.
Like, at the end of the day, you're ranked 400 in the world, and you came out and you made a dollar.
Yeah, I think you've made it.
Okay, John.
All right. A little confusing there. I was a little confused, but I'm going to give a little. I'm going to keep it to tennis specifically. I don't think you have to be profitable to say you're a professional tennis player or to say you've made it, because we know how tough tennis is. You're on your own out there. You're funding everything on your own. It's crazy hard. You can be 250 in the world and run a deficit at the end of the year. So everyone's talked about how tough it is to make it in tennis. I think, you know, if you're in the year 250 in the world, even if you lost money, I still think you've made it. Think how good you are as a tennis player. That's very, very impressive. So I don't think you have to be profitable in our sport to say you've made it. But yes, like Stevie said, if you're playing futures qualies, if you played 2 years of qualifying in futures and maybe qualified for a few of the main draws and won a match here or there, no, you're not a professional player. You went out and you tried to play professional tennis. That does not make you a pro.
Correct. That's a loose term that a lot of people use, I feel like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Jack?
It's thrown around in the pickleball world a lot. You'll see it even in players' bios. Former professional tennis player, and they're, like Stevie said, they're ranked 1,600 and tried to play for 3 months. But that's their intro when they walk on the court. So I think that's a bit frustrating because I don't consider that. Yeah, I completely agree with that. That was a perfect way to say it from John. You tried to play professional tennis. Obviously didn't quite work out. And then it's kind of a gray area after that. I kind of feel the same as Stevie a little bit. Like, yes, you're a professional tennis player. If you're 250, maybe you're in a deficit, like John said. But I think when the question also is how to make it, I do think you have to be profitable as well at some point, be able to support yourself, support a lifestyle. So it's a bit of a gray area, but I kind of agree with everything that was said. I don't really know what the exact definition would be, but I agree with bits and pieces of all of it. It's hard to hit the nail on the head with that.
Sam, what do you think?
All right. I'm going to go with like, you made it top 100.
That's what I was going to say at the beginning. Yeah.
And I'm not, and this is like, no, the guy ranked 101 and lower are phenomenal players and phenomenal athletes. But for me, at the end of the day is like, oh, that guy made it. I'm going top 100. Just like in basketball, you had to have played in the NBA. Like the G League guy, again, he's unbelievable. The guy that played in Europe is unbelievable. But if you made it, you played in the NBA. In Major League Baseball, you had to make it to MLB, not AAA. Golf, PGA, not Corn Ferry. And again, no shade to the guys that didn't do it. They're phenomenal.
So it has nothing to do with money to you?
No, it doesn't.
But there's a difference between made it and what it is to be a pro.
I'm going made it. This is what we were kind of debating. I'm going to you made it. Top 100 in the world. That's like my bar.
For me, I would say at any point in your career, if you ever played a Grand Slam qualies, you've made it in my mind.
Okay. So that's 240.
Top 240-ish.
Yeah, you're hell of an effort. And that guy's amazing. Yeah. I'm not debating that. I'm just saying like at the end of the year, like, oh, like, did you play in the league? It's like top 100 in my mind.
It's a good point by you, I guess, but like, I just disagree with it.
But there's always going to be a one-off thing too. A guy's played challengers his whole life, grinding prize money check to prize money check, and then sneaks in one Grand Slam qualies one time in his career. Oh, so he made it. Then it's like, all right. I think
you can. Everyone's it's different. It's totally subjective, of course.
There's an argument for all of them. And again, the guy ranked 150 or 200 or 220 is unbelievable at tennis and so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just didn't make the show.
So if you got to 101, you didn't make it. Karsten Ball.
Yeah, you're right.
Did not make it at 101.
Yeah.
Because you beat him in the finals of LA.
I mean, I got to draw a line somewhere. Then we're going to go 102, 103, 104. I mean, rules are rules in my fake narrative that I'm making up.
Okay. There you go. I like it.
Again, the guy ranked 101. So good at tennis. Phenomenal.
You're a tough critic.
101 in tennis is far better than making the G League or the farm leagues in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to think about it, sheer numbers.
Sheer numbers. There's probably a bunch of NBA guys, probably a bunch of guys trying to play basketball that are in the G League.
Those guys that hoop over in Europe or the baseball players that play over in Japan and South Korea, they make really good money.
The tennis player ranked 200. I bet I can look him up right now. I bet he's made 300 grand this year.
Yeah.
I'm going made it, not like what it means to be a pro. I'm going made it. So Anyway, I don't know. Let us know what you guys think. No one needs to like come at me. The guy ranked 101's phenomenal and so good. All right, let's move on. We got Shanghai this week. Sinner won it last year, took out Novak in the finals. Sinner's got a lot of points to defend this fall. Let me go back to Stevie J. You had to go right now. Are you taking Alcaraz to end the year number one, or can Sinner back up all the points that he accumulated last fall and jump Carlos to get back to the number one ranking?
Are we talking in ranking? Are we talking race? Sometimes that gets confusing.
Only Jack doesn't know what that is.
That was awesome.
That was
I think Carlos gets number one. Stays number one, finishes the year number one. I think he's just got the head-to-head edge over Sinner. As long as Alcaraz stays healthy, I'm going to take him to finish year number one over Sinner.
Agreed. I know my take last year, I said top five, stupidest take of all time, but I'm with you on that one.
Maybe not all time. The show is young, you know?
Yeah. John, what's Novak Djokovic back in action in Shanghai? What do you think his expectations are for Shanghai? The last three tournaments he's played have been majors. So I guess why do you think he's playing it? And two, like, I don't know, is he going in like, oh, I'm going to win this thing?
By the way, Carlos has a 2,700-point lead. So this thing's done and dusted.
Done, yeah.
In the race, Jack.
I still don't know.
Anyway, but going on to Novak, I think he's playing this because, you know, he's obviously taken a lot of time off this year. He clearly wants to play next year. He wouldn't if he wasn't planning on like playing the similar type of schedule he played this year, next year, he would not be playing Shanghai. I think too much time off for him would be a big detriment to him. As you get older, as you guys well know, I believe this is at least my experience, the more time off, if you take big chunks of time off, the harder it is for me to recover. You need to at least try to play a little bit. So I think that's what he's doing. Shanghai's always attracted the top players. Fed always played it. Maybe it had something to do with Rolex or something. I don't know. But Djokovic is out there playing. He's had a lot of success in Shanghai, of course. So I think this is his way of sort of staying engaged with the tour. It will be interesting to see what he does after Shanghai. Last year, he decided not to play Turin. Did not play Paris either, anything in the fall, I believe. So I think I said last year that we would see him in Turin. We didn't, but we'll see. I think if this is his last tournament of the year, then like, okay, he wants to end on a somewhat of a high note with some good matches, and he'll get ready and prepare for the Aussie Open. So I think this is him just sort of staying physically engaged and mentally engaged to the games. He doesn't want to have too much time off.
In Shanghai, is it Sinner against the field?
I don't know unless there's an injury, like this ankle injury we thought might come about with Carlos or Sinner potentially. But outside of injury, it's Sinner Alcaraz versus the field. They're dominating. I don't see anybody breaking into that at all. So yeah, I'll take them against the field in any tournament that they're both in 100% of the time.
Until someone beats dethrones both of them back to back in the same tournament, I'll always take them. Like if someone beats, you know, Sinner and then Casper Ruud in the final, or Alcaraz and Fritz, I would still take Sinner or Alcaraz moving forward. Until someone beats both of them back to back, like there's no discussion.
Wasn't it? Sorry, this is random. Wasn't it like now Bandian like years ago in the indoor Madrid? Didn't he take out all of the big three en route to the title or something like that? Something.
I don't know if it was the big three, but it was players ranked 1, 2, 3.
No, it was. I'm pretty sure it was Roger, Rafa, Novak. He did. He's like the only person in the history of the world.
To Jack's point, that's what it's going to take. Like what Nalbandian did at the indoor Madrid tournament. Which did you guys, Sam? Did you ever play that?
No, my first year playing Madrid was 2008.
I never played the indoor Madrid, but Nalbandian had a legendary run. I don't know in what order, but he beat Fed, Nadal, and Djokovic in that tournament. So that's kind of that's the hill that it seems that some of these guys now have to climb if they want to beat Sinner and Alcaraz, both in the same tournament. Just seems like too much of a tall task.
Is this Madrid 2007 we're looking at?
We're looking at Madrid 2007.
Yeah.
In succession, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. He went Nadal, Djokovic, Fed.
That's pretty cool.
Before that, he went Delpo. Before that, he went Burdich.
Burdich.
Oh, my gosh. That's the greatest tournament in the history of the world.
Burdich, Delpo, Nadal, Djokovic, Fed.
Yeah, and a sneaky Clement in the first round.
And then he won Paris, beating Fed and Dahl again.
Jeez, Louise, Nalbandian.
What a run.
That guy was on fire.
And as Sam would say, they ultimately all went on to have a better career. But yeah.
Ultimately,
he was so nasty. But that is a ridiculous run.
Yeah. That might be the greatest stretch of like 3 days in the history of tennis.
Yes, I think it is. Dude, and that's what someone has to do now to beat Sinner and Alcaraz.
But clearly, like, that didn't help the rest of the tour from 2007 to whenever, you know, everybody retired. Like, nobody then gained more belief that they could do it. Even though they watched somebody do it, nobody in the locker room, like, rubbed off on there and, like, got the energy to, like, actually beat those guys, which is amazing. Because you would think if somebody beats Carlos and Jannik back-to-back, like, the rest of the locker room might have some belief. But that still may not be the case. It may just be a one-off and we'll call it a day.
Look, this happened one time. Maybe this will happen one time that someone beats Carlos and Sinner back-to-back.
Well, that's the greatest run in tournament history.
That's the greatest run in tournament history. Delpo,
Nadal, Djokovic, Fed, 5 in a row.
Yeah.
Shout
that's
out.
That's insane.
And then sprinkle in a first-round loss Basel and then just back it up in Paris the next week.
Yeah,
first-round loss in Basel.
Who did he lose to in Basel?
Stan.
Oh, well, yeah.
Oh.
God.
I didn't get a breather in the draws.
He took out Rafa 1 and 2, by the way, in Madrid.
How smooth was that Nalbandian backhand?
Early on, Rafa indoor hard court was like not the
don't you hate him? That's Rafa. True. Don't
2007. Yeah.
And then he beat him 4-0 in the Paris final. It says, "Jeez."
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, unbelievable. All right. Well, speaking, let's go back to Shanghai. It was voted Masters Series of the Year, by the way. We've talked about this on the pod. Players at the end of the year, we vote on our favorite 250, favorite 500, and favorite Masters Series. Shanghai won Masters Series of the Year 2009 to 2013. Guys, my opinion is this was all because of the food. When you walked into the Players' Lounge, if you had a credential, it was one of the first tournaments where you can just eat whatever you wanted all the time. You, your friends, your whoever was there with you, if you had a credential, you were in the lounge, and the food was, you can get the tomahawk steak, the bento box, the pizza oven, the best food of the year, and that's why it won Masters Series of the Year for those four straight years. Stevie, do you agree with that? Is that why it won it?
I didn't play any of those years, but my first year was 2014, but still.
Oh, you're hold on. Stop. Let me go to John then, and then I'm going to come back to you, because he actually played it those years.
Yeah. We're talking about Shanghai still, right?
Yeah.
But what are you talking about? You didn't play.
He wasn't on the tour yet.
Nobody listens to me on this freaking show.
It didn't continue to win. I don't know the results. That's what I'm saying. I
hate you guys.
I said it won Tournament Masters Series of the Year 2009 and 2013. Stevie wasn't around yet, so he didn't play.
I know,
play
but
it
I'm
yet.
Saying it didn't keep winning Masters Series of the Year. That's my.
No, then it went to Indian Wells.
Sorry. Okay. Because I just, because the obviously, bit. Sam, I'm with you. Sorry, Stevie. Not making any sense here. I'm with you. The food was incredible. The bento boxes were legendary. But you could go there on noon on a Tuesday and get the tomahawk steak.
Yeah,
you sure could.
It was that good, and it was just like so. I was so excited to whether it was like after a match or after practice. I was so excited to eat. It was just so much fun. Just to sit at a table with all you guys and just eat and have fellowship. It was great for sure.
That was the only tournament of the year that I would practice in the afternoon. That was it. Because you'd eat breakfast at the hotel in the morning, you'd grind out a stupid bus ride to the courts for an hour, you'd have a nice lunch there, you'd hit from like, you know, 2 to 4 or whatever, and then, because you would plan it, so then you could eat dinner before going back to the hotel. That was the only time I would go European, hit in the afternoon.
Do you guys remember in the lunchroom there, they had that one kind of room, it had all the silver beads coming down, you know, you'd go through?
Yes!
And Federer was always in there eating. I feel like Roger was always
the one
there
in the back. Yeah.
It's like the throne's room.
And top eight, I had a couple years where I was a top eight seed there. Jack, were you ever a top eight seed there?
I think I might have gotten one doubles time. Locker 1 year.
If you were 1 or 2 seed in doubles or top eight seed in singles, you had your own personal locker room. It was like
Really?
I think that's why I got voted up there as well. So those guys, you got a private locker room down a different hallway, like your own apartment thing, like room.
You didn't know that, Sam?
No.
Where was that?
You could literally, are you serious? There's 10 rooms.
Sorry. Yes. It was by that music room that the Bryan brothers just live in, play the guitar all day. Yeah.
Yes, yes. But you had this like palatial, you know, like 1,200 square foot like locker room just like a yourself. Flat. It was great. It was a flat.
I didn't realize that.
Uh-huh. Stevie, give us an Isner anchovy story real quick.
John, you or I want to tee this up.
I'll tee it up for you. All I'll say is that Steve and I were just playing some pranks on each other, and he took it from a level 1 to a level 10. I drew something on his credential that I thought was funny. You know, I just literally with the Sharpie drew on his credential.
What, like googly eyes over his face or something?
We won't need to go into details as to what I drew, but it's just Sharpie on his credential, right? He could maybe try to wipe it off or get a new one. It's an easy fix, okay? Go ahead, Stevie.
Again, in the fall, we start to kind of lose our marbles just a hair, right? Like, it gets long. You're in wherever. You've been traveling. You're tired. Pranks start to be had at the end of the year. John started it. I'll finish it. It's fine. You know, so John goes Picasso on my credential. We play each other in the second round, maybe, or third round, whatever it was. John beats me 6-6, and he leaves the courts. You know, he's done, whatever. I'm like at the course trying to figure out my flights, get upgraded, whatever. John's locker, obviously he wasn't in the top 8 seated locker room this year because his locker was next to mine, and his locker didn't lock. Like, we all had those like magnets that you could kind of open and close. His didn't lock. Unlucky for John. I'm in the locker room packing up my stuff, and I remember his locker is unlocked. So I then go back to the mess hall, grab, you know, anchovies, blue cheese, anything that just reeks of just whatever you can get, right? And I put a nice plate, just a beautifully manicured plate, right into his locker. He's got hats in there, shoes, whatever. And I leave. I'm like, well, I'm out of here tomorrow, so not my concern. So the next day, I'm like, wake up early. Like, I don't have, like, you know, you guys know how it is leaving Shanghai. I don't have like a flight till 8 or 9 p.m. coming back to the States. And I'm just like waiting up for my, you know, like a 1 p.m. text from John, basically being like, oh my God, like, what happened in this locker room? Sure enough, the day goes on. He texts me. He goes, dude, that was the grossest thing I have ever seen in my life. He goes, I had to throw away everything in my locker. It smelled rancid. Yeah. Like, you could go into the locker room and it smelled like the whole locker room stunk.
Yeah. Yeah, you ruined it for everybody.
You ruined it for everyone. Yeah. Hey,
yeah.
Not my fault that you aren't willing to go the extra mile to finish
that you defaced his credential.
Yeah, exactly. I drew on your credential. Therefore, you ruined the tournament.
Yes.
And that Stevie would retaliate by taking down the entire tournament.
Yes.
Yeah. You ruined the locker room experience for the whole tournament because I drew on your credential.
Hey, that's not my fault. Your locker was unlocked.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's funny.
It is exactly how Stevie said it. It was awful.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was on a nice flight back to L.A. Thank John. If you didn't beat me, I wouldn't have done it. So.
Yeah, right. This is John's fault.
Oh, 6-6. A couple of epic breakers in front of nobody. By the Apocalypse Now court by the river.
All right, funny stuff. Let's move on.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, everyone, enjoy this amazing interview with Alex Mickelson. We filmed it last week after the Labor Cup. He was in Tokyo, and that's where we caught up with him. So enjoy.
All right, everyone, welcome back to Nothing Major. We have a special guest on. We have world number 32, Alex Mickelson. That is important for us because Sam, I believe in March of 2025, told him that he can come onto the pod when he was top 30. He achieved that goal. So we are rewarding him with, you know, being on the show. What more could you ask for than to be on the show with Sam and myself right now?
Yeah, nothing. I mean, this is like the highlight of my year for sure.
If this is the highlight of the year, that's an awful year. It certainly should not be the highlight of your year.
It's been a long year, believe it or not. It's been a long year.
Let's get into it. You just got invited, your first ever Laver Cup. What was that feeling like when you got the call? Did Andre call you? Did somebody else call you? Did you have an idea that you might be on the radar for the team? How'd that go for you?
Yeah, so I was the first alternate, and when they came out with the original team, I was the first alternate, and I was just kind of waiting around. If someone got hurt, I would fill in, and then a couple guys, you know, three guys from there. I mean, I think it was Francis, Tommy, and Ben all didn't go, and they were all in the original six. So whoever pulled first, I got in, and then I called Andre for like an hour, and I didn't think he would like be as into it as he was, and he was crazy into it. Like, I mean, you could probably see on TV, the guy was just like giving crazy energy. It was an absolute blast. But I mean, it was kind of like a pinch me moment. I thought no chance I'd ever play Laver Cup. I remember watching on TV, and like I was just there with like Agassi and Rafter and like all the boys. It was an absolute blast. I had a blast.
Wait, did Andre called you when those guys pulled out?
Yeah, well, I mean, not like right away, but we like texted a little bit, and he's like,
"Did you have Andre's number already?" Or like,
no,
blank
I didn't.
Number?
I didn't.
All right.
I did not have his number, and then I have it now. And then he shot me a text. He's like, "Dude, just call me whenever." And then I remember I was like 8 a.m. And I was like, if you're up, you can call me. And he calls me. He's like, of course I'm up. I'm like 55. Of course I'm up at 8 a.m. Like,
pretty funny. This is true.
But I mean, he's hilarious. And he's got one of a kind tennis mind.
At Laver Cup, like you played Friday. That was the biggest crowd basically you've ever played in, one of the biggest moments. Was that the most nervous you've ever been on the tennis court?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I came out and I couldn't make a ball for like 40 minutes. I was tight out of my mind. Like, I've never played in front of that many people. I played on Ash last year against Sinner, but like no one was there because I was getting chopped. So I've never played in front of that many people. I was really tight, and then Andre kind of helped me loosen up as the match went on. But yeah, it was definitely an experience. Now I can draw on that, you know, going forward when I play in front of more big crowds. But yeah, I was tight as a rope.
You know, what was your expectation going into it? Were you nervous like an hour before, the day before, when you knew you were going to play, or like did it all just kind of come to a head like right when you get out there? You see the crowd, you see Andre, you see the atmosphere, and then it just kind of happens.
Yeah, it all just kind of came to a head, like you said. Like, I was walking out there, and I was like walking side by side with Andre, and when I walked out there, I was like, dude, like, what's going on right now? I was like, I don't know what's happening. And before the match, I was like perfectly fine. Like, I was watching because Riley was playing. I was cheering him on. And then I went inside to get ready, and you know, I did my normal warm up with Rocket, and like, you know, I was doing just fine. And then I walked out there, and like, I just couldn't put a ball in the court. Yeah, I don't know.
Was the Thursday night before, they obviously have like the amazing gala where you're dressed up in black tie. Roger was there. Was that the first time you had met Federer?
Yeah, it was. I met him the first time at the gala. And if you want to hear something very embarrassing, pretty funny. So I lost a bet to Fritzy. Fritzy was like, what are the odds that you trip up the stairs when you get announced? And I said 1 in 20, because I was like, you know, okay, 1 in 20. And we both say 17. So he's like going nuts. He's so happy I got to do it. And when Zhao announced me, I gave it a little trip, and it was really embarrassing in front of like 1,000 people. It was not fun. So I think my luck was just doomed from the start.
Yeah, that's a tough way to start. But hey, look, you're a man of your word. A bet is a bet, and you honor that. I find that to be impressive.
Yeah, that was. I didn't want to do it, but I wasn't gonna welch. I mean, I thought for sure, no chance I would. So who the hell says 17 on 1 in 20? Like, yeah, I don't know.
Apparently you and Fritz.
They love Laver Cup. The guys love that, like, what are the odds game.
Yeah, they love it. We had a blast.
That game's been going on for a long time.
There's some other ones that Riley was throwing out there that you can't do. Like, you know Riley, he's just so out of pocket, but hilarious guy, unbelievable guy.
What's it like, you know, for you guys in the locker room? Because generally, I mean, you've been around Davis Cups, you've played Davis Cup in that locker room with guys from, you know, not just America, but all over the world, you know, having that shared camaraderie for Team World, you know, with Fonseca and with, you know, with Demon and those guys, like all to one goal. Is that a different feeling for you guys in that locker room compared to like being in the Davis Cup room?
Yeah, for sure. And someone asked me about that actually. And I told him it was like kind of like Davis Cup on steroids. That's kind of how I would describe it. It was just a little more energy, you know, you got guys from everywhere, and it's just a little different. I loved every second of Davis Cup, but this was just, there was a little different atmosphere and energy around it. And, you know, I hadn't spent a lot of time with, you know, most of those boys before, this weekend. And yeah, I mean, we did a lot of bonding and getting to know each other, and, you know, we talking about all our strengths and weaknesses and our games and stuff like that. And it was just, yeah, something that can't really be replicated even by Davis Cup, if you ask me.
On Friday night, you guys go down 3-1. just in general, is there somebody that steps up in that locker room and gives like a big speech of like, hey, we're still good, like we're right in this? You know, is that Andre? Is that one of the guys on the team? Or who's kind of leading the charge that it's just Friday and there's a lot more tennis to be played?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of Andre and Fritzy, because Fritzy's been there a million times. I mean, that was like his fifth Laver Cup maybe. And he was, you know, at least, you know, describing all the, you know, it's like we just needed one match, like to win one match to get even. So I don't think any of us were really too worried. And we, you know, even though they, we had to make the lineup and they got to match up against our guys on day two, we felt pretty good, like going in, we felt pretty good about everything. We didn't think Fritz would beat Alcaraz, but everything else we felt pretty good about. And, you know, there wasn't really a lot of panic. We all felt that we could still win. And, you know, Andre off his, you know, three Red Bulls a day gave us a little inspiration speech at the end of the night. And yeah, we were all jacked up for day two. And we never thought that, you know, we were big underdogs on paper, but we never really felt that way.
How was the after party that you guys didn't invite me to Sunday night?
Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time. I mean,
did you ever like think about Sam, or was it like even
should have invited you? I mean, you could have sent me a text. I mean,
did his name ever cross your guys' mind while partying?
I'm not gonna lie. After the only time Sam crossed my mind the whole weekend was when he came to the bench and tried to be one of us. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, but. Yeah, next time we win, if I go again, I'll and you're there, I'll invite you. I promise. I'm sorry.
Did you guys? I remember talking to Fritzy. Did you guys go right from like being out that night to the airport and fly to Tokyo?
So almost. So I was out from like 11 to like 2, and then I went back to the hotel and like I slept for like 40 minutes and then went to the airport.
Oh,
yeah, it was a battle. It was a battle. And like the airport, like, you know, in San Francisco, it's super hilly, and like I thought for sure I was gonna yak. I somehow didn't, but. I thought for sure I was like four different times I almost told the guy to pull over because I was just gonna yak, but I didn't. I held.
Sunday night's not like the best go out night.
No, it's not. It's not, and it wasn't, you know, the greatest, but like we still had a lot of tennis people there, so we had a good time and we won something, so it was fun.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, so you know it's important. You guys got to win for Team World. You moved on, and you know that's the thing in pro tennis. It just never stops. So. Enough about your guys' title in Team World, making Sam jealous that he never won it. But, you know, for you, you know, as, you know, somebody who grew up in Southern California, how big of an idol was Sam Querrey to you growing up, being, you know, in Southern California?
Well, Stevie was more of a junior icon and college icon. And so
I'm asking the question.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Stevie was, like, a little more iconic. Because, I mean, I'm from Orange County, Stevie. So, like, I mean, and I know you are, too. And I feel like it was more Stevie, but I would watch all four of you guys. Honestly, I don't know where these other two slackers are, but I watched all four of you guys on TV a ton. And I mean, I actually remember Stevie was playing a like that team tennis thing in Newport Beach, and I got your autograph when I was like 11 or 12, and I told you I won 12 sectionals. I told you I won 12 sectionals, and you were like, oh, I won 12s, 14s, 16s, and 18s. I was like, thanks, Stevie.
Just giving you something to like improve on, you know. I thought you were asking for like, you know, motivation. I didn't think you want your pat on the back as a 12-year-old.
All I wanted was a pat on the back for you when I was 12.
I'm sorry.
Speaking of junior tennis, when did you realize you were like really good at tennis? Was there a moment when you were like 14, 15, 16, 17? You're like, all right, I'm good here. Like, I definitely go to college, but maybe even go past that and go to the pros, which you did.
I knew I was like pretty good. I didn't think I was pro level, but I knew I was pretty good in like 21. You know, I was like top five in my class, tennis recruiting. You know, I committed to Georgia. I knew I was pretty good. And then I started playing some futures and I was like, wait, I can beat all these guys. And I kind of just started like being super delusional and like thinking I could be a pro. And I don't know. I was never like before, if COVID didn't happen, no chance I'd be a pro because I would have never homeschooled. And I would have just gone to college and got a desk job. I've never been a pro. I got COVID kind of saved my tennis career, to be honest. But because that's when I started playing like 5 hours a day. Because before that, I was very average. I was playing like high school tennis. Like I was very average. And like, yeah, I just started playing these futures, and I won two futures, and I was ranked like 500, and then I finaled a challenger, and I was like, wait, I can do this. But my parents really wanted me to go to school, and I kind of only had like a limited window to kind of break through. And then I won the Chicago Challenger, and this is the summer of 23.
You broke through.
Yeah, I was top 200, and I was like, okay, this surely I can go pro now. I'm top 200, and then I final Newport. I beat Mr. Isner in the semis, and that kind of solidified it.
But that's important too. I mean, I believe it was early in 2023 as well, where you beat Jack in Cleveland. Do I have that year right, or is that 22?
Yeah, that was 23. Yeah, that was early 23.
I mean, I remember watching that match, and like, you know, I was talking to Jack before, and he's like, oh, we're at a challenger. We don't necessarily want to be there at that point of our career. We're like, we're going back, and not. You know, you're kind of coming up, and you know, everybody, I mean, at least I knew, right? I'd practiced through a ton that your backhand was insane. I mean, it's going to be, you're a tall kid. You're still, you know, figuring out all your other stuff. But I was like, if Jack gets into a backhand like battle with this guy, it's going to go poorly for Jack. But in that moment, when you do beat Jack, even though it is at, you know, Cleveland Challenger, it's not the biggest event in the world, right? But does that give you the belief at that point? Does that like help kickstart your career? Does that just further your belief that you are going to be, you know, someone viable to be a professional tennis player?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, being a former top 10 player, and like, I mean, he won a 1000, he was sick. He was top 10. So yeah, I mean, being a former top 10 player for sure gave me a lot of, you know, inspiration. And obviously I knew he was on the back end of his career, and like, you know, he didn't necessarily want to be there, but doesn't matter. I still got a win against a former top 10 guy, and I was feeling great about my game. I remember I won a future the week before, and like, I remember I was feeling pretty good. And yeah, the confidence definitely spiraled upward.
Is there more pressure for you, you know, at that point? You know, you're kind of getting your feet wet in the Pro Tour, right? You're winning futures. You won Chicago Challenger in the summer. You final an ATP event that same summer in Newport, Rhode Island, and you beat John in the semis. Like, that's a pretty quick rise to, you know, the top 100 and making an ATP final, like, at such a young age of somebody who's maybe lesser known than others at the time. I mean, not for us in the States, but maybe worldwide. Does that put more pressure on you? Does that like change your outcome, your look at the sport? Are you nervous? Are you more nervous now going to events because you have expectation? Like, how does that feel for you?
Well, when I did well in Chicago and Newport, I had no expectation. Like, I was literally the last guy in both those draws. I remember, I was last one in. I didn't really have too many expectations. I was just kind of going out there and just kind of just competing and seeing what would happen. But after I finaled Newport, I like officially turned pro. And then it kind of got real for me, and then I started to get a little more nervous, and I had a kind of a rough fall. Didn't do well in like the couple of the challengers, like the Tiburon, Fairfield, Charlottesville. Didn't do great, and then I broke through, and then I won. I won one of those indoor challengers to make top 100. But yeah, I mean, once I turned pro, like out the gates at 18, I was pretty nervous. Yeah.
So you weren't pro in 2023 when you made finals in Newport. You're still technically, you hadn't, okay. So, but that's solidified, you know, a done deal.
Then you got no prize money for that?
No, I took the prize money. No, I took
it. All right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
do you check the bank account when the prize money comes in? Are you looking like a week later to see if it hits?
I used to, yeah, not anymore.
Whoa. What about Labor Cup? You guys got a $250,000 bonus. Has that hit yet?
No, it has not.
Have you checked today?
I'm waiting for that one.
You have your phone?
I'm
doing online banking. Have you checked today?
Do you want me to check right now?
Check right now. Just see if that 250 hit.
At what point, if it doesn't hit, do you call Roger and, you know, start to get the wheels in motion?
Probably in about 7 days. Yeah. Probably about a week.
Roger. Yeah, right.
Yeah, nothing yet, dude. Roger's withholding the money, dude.
He's withholding. Hopefully earlier next week. All right, I want to ask you about your coin collection. I don't know where we got this information, but do you have a coin collection?
I haven't like collected a coin since I was like 14. I think I said that in one interview and everyone talks about it, but
do you still have a collection of coins, like valuable coins?
Yeah, at home I probably got $5,000 worth of coins.
What even is a valuable coin?
Like just like a dollar coin from 1920 that was made in a certain factory, like that was minted in a certain factory, and they only have a certain amount, and like,
interesting,
they're rare. And I've got coins from like countries. And
14, 15, 16-year-old Alex, I just love this stuff.
Yeah, 14-year-old Alex. Yeah, and then I got into video games when I turned 15, so I stopped all that. But I mean, my brother did it, so I just copied him when I was younger. He has like probably double the amount of coins that I do. But it was something that, you know, him and I would bond over when I was younger.
Yeah, I actually just looking at some of our notes. Did I miss something? You had match point in that Newport final against Marcos in 23?
Yeah, in 24. I lost 24, to Manorino okay. in 23. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, I was like, got it.
I had a singular. I had a singular match point. I got aced.
Well, that makes you feel better, right? A little?
A little, yeah. But I wasn't leaning T, and he beat me T. Like, he's not going to my backhand on championship point. I was really pressed. I was pissed in the locker room after. I was pissed.
Going back to 2020, last year was basically your first full year on tour. 2024, now you've played almost another year, 2025. You have a favorite moment so far in your relatively short pro career?
I mean, finaling Newport for the first time and then backing it up with another final was really special for me. That was really cool. And then, honestly, I would have to say I won the Estoril 175 yeah. this year. And I, like, rolled my ankle 2 weeks before that. I was in Dallas. My girlfriend lives in Dallas, and I was there. And I hit with John the day before I rolled my ankle. And then the next day I was hitting with Kova, and I rolled it. And I didn't think I'd be able to play in Madrid. And I went over there and got shot by Bublik, and then went to Portugal and just played super well. And I was just super, super proud of my – I didn't think I'd be able to play. I thought I broke it initially.
That tournament, too, for people that don't know, has like a tour event. It used to be a tour event, and even though it's a 175, the stadium and the event, wouldn't you say it feels like it's a 250 tour level event?
Yeah, I mean, it basically was, and they're putting it back to 250 next year. So I mean, it was very, you know, high class event. The hotel we stayed at was a joke, 5-star hotel. It was amazing.
Yeah, and it's like for you, Alex, you know, being so young, you know, there's other players around your age, right? Like, I mean, two Southern California kids, yourself and Lerner Tien, but you have like Fonseca, Jacob Menchik. Some of these guys are getting more publicity and just, you know, just more eyeballs on them. Does that fuel you to, you know, be better? Does that bother you that they're, you know, the same, you know, same as you, but they're ranked, you know, you're ranked higher than Fonseca and these guys, like, and you don't get kind of the clout that they're getting in the media sense?
I mean, if I was from Brazil like Fonseca and I was ranked higher, I would be salty, but no, yeah. I'm not. So I've always liked being under the radar, honestly. My whole career I've been under the radar. No one really, you know, knew who I was when I was coming up, and I feel like even now a lot of people don't know who I am, and I like it that way, honestly. I like being under the radar. I love nothing more, and you know, I would say Lerner's still pretty under the radar too.
Yes.
Even though he's had some fantastic wins this year, I still think he's pretty under the radar. I mean, he should be, you know, more on the radar. He's 19, he's 50 in the world, and he's got how many top 10 wins already? So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's cool that we have a great group of young guys. I know all of them pretty well. I played juniors with all of them. We all, you know, kind of came up around the same time, and I'm happy for everyone that's kind of doing well around my age. Yeah. I'm not really salty at all. I don't really care too much what other people are doing or what other people think. I just kind of like doing my own thing. Yeah.
It's the right process to have for sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
In the locker room, at least when we're commentating and working on ESPN, the consensus amongst like all of us is like it's Sinner and Alcaraz are like the only two that can win a major, and they've like separated themselves from the field, which they kind of have in a way. In the locker room, is that kind of the feeling too? Do you think guys are like, yeah, it's Sinner and Alcaraz and then everyone else? Or do guys like talk about like, oh yeah, I think I can win these tournaments? Or do you think they really don't think they can?
When someone, whatever, says, oh yeah, I think I can win the US Open, everyone just bursts out laughing. I mean, it's just, yeah. Like there's nothing that us poor guys can do against those guys as of right now. I mean, it's just, I don't think anyone genuinely believes it anymore.
That's what I think too.
Except maybe Novak, but I mean, he's not getting any younger. So, I mean, but we'll see. But it's,
Does that change for you, like being at Laver Cup, watching Carlos like up close and personal, and then also having, you know, Fritz and Demon and these guys talking about how to play him like up close and personal? Does that help you guys in a sense of like somewhat getting more belief into beating them? Or is there just nothing you can do? Like the more you watch him, like the harder it is to beat him.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a little bit of the Fritz versus Carlos match, and Fritz was just redlining when I was watching. He was playing sick. I didn't really watch too much of the second set, but I watched him play Cerundolo. Carlos played Cerundolo the next day, and the guy was just hitting the absolute crap out of the ball, and just he makes everything look easy. Like he's so fast. When I was playing him in doubles a couple times, like I thought like for sure put away volley. I already had like going like this fist, and he's getting there. I'm like, dude, this guy is a joke. He's
the fastest player of all time. I've never seen anyone as fast as Carlos Alcaraz.
I would agree with that for sure. I mean, he's a joke. I I think in 3 out of 5, him and Sinner are just really tough. Like 2 out of 3, like you get a day where you're playing sick, it's a lot easier to beat him. But 3 out of 5 is tough.
Speaking of that, like Carlos doubles match, I gotta ask, like, did you feel kind of stupid when you got drop shotted inside the service box and you didn't get there?
Dude.
That shot was unbelievable, though.
Honestly,
it's an unbelievable shot, but like,
no. But the camera angle doesn't do it right because I was there, but I couldn't get it because it went back into the net. I was there.
Are you sure?
Dude, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? If there was no net there, I for sure would have.
There's a net everywhere. What do you mean?
Dude, if there was no net there, I could have ran through that and touched it. You think I couldn't have touched it if the net wasn't
in the way? I don't
think
so. I think your momentum was going backwards just enough that you couldn't get it. It was so feathery.
I had a similar thing happen to me with Roger at Wimbledon, you know.
I remember being right in front. I was like, this ball is going to go back into the net. I don't have a chance. No, I didn't have a chance. It was one of the best balls I've ever seen. And
you got to just don't run. Just let it be.
Well, yeah, I guess it would make me look. Does that make you look more or less stupid if I don't run for it?
No. Dude, this happened to me when I played Roger at Wimbledon. I think it was 2016. He was going in like, you know, was hitting those like drop shots, like returns that were just filthy. Like for a while.
Yeah.
And I was up 40 love and he hit one and I took one like inkling of a step and I was like, don't do it. Cause you're just going to look really stupid. Just let him hit a winner and like try and win the next point. So smart by me to just not make any effort. Cause then you like just look like you're running in place and you can't get there. You just drop shot return wintered you. So that was a good choice by me. You actually went for it, which was, I don't think you got there.
Yeah,
the clip's not good for you, man.
I'm sorry for putting my best foot forward. I'm sorry for putting my best foot forward. I'm sorry.
You got to think about what's going to live on the internet forever. That's more important these days.
Well, oh no, Carlos clipped me. It's not like he's clipped everyone else in the top 100.
Exactly.
Like, oh no.
He's never done that to anyone.
When you're traveling around the tour, like, you know, obviously me, Stevie, John, we overlapped. Are the guys like, you know, Francis, Taylor, Riley, Tommy, they're all, you know, 5-6 years older than you. How are they as far as like not mentoring you, but are they cool with you? Like when you're at all the tournaments now, you guys are friends, but you feel like you're part of the crew now?
I wouldn't say I'm a part of their crew, but I would say that they've become a lot more friendly to me in the last, you know, over the last year. Cause I just see them all the time. At first, the first person to become friendly with me obviously was Francis. I mean, he was just like, he would just like see me in the locker room. He'd just scream like Mickelson, like, you know how he is. He would just, yeah, I mean, you know, as I started practicing with, you know, these guys and seeing them at tournaments, I played them all, I think. I played all those guys and, you know, just they're all really cool. And, you know, I watched them on TV when I was younger and, you know, it's cool that, you know, I'm friends with all these guys. And, you know, we talk about tennis and I try to, you know, take some nuggets, you know, where I can.
No, I do hate the question. I hate when people are like, what are the older guys? What advice have you gotten from the older guys? Never in the history of tennis or other sports do they sit you down and be like, hey, let me give you some advice about the tour. Like, that doesn't happen. It's the stupidest question.
Imagine Francis sitting me down and asking and like telling me about the tour.
I would love to see that, quite frankly.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. Yeah.
I mean, even though you are still like pretty young on tour, like was there one moment where you were like, I've made it, but like, wow, like I'm like, this is like surreal that I'm out there right now.
I've had a couple moments like that. I played Zverev in Australian Open last year, and that was like my first slam I got into on my ranking. And I got to the third round. I was playing Zverev, and I was like, "What?" In front of packed Rod Laver, and I was like, "What's going on? What's going on?" I've had a couple moments where I've like, I don't know, because pro tennis was never really in the cards for me. I never really thought it would happen, and I feel like it's all gone by super quick. Like one day I was like, you know, just like, you know, playing high school tennis. And the next day I'm playing Zverev on Rod Laver. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know what to do. And then I played, same thing happened to me, Demon, this year in the fourth round. I was on the road to getting double bageled. But at least played a respectable second and third. But yeah, I mean, those two and then playing on Ash against Sinner. Those are all like really, really cool moments for me. And again, hopefully I can use those experiences to help me a little more. Oh, and playing Novak in Shanghai last year, I mean, that was sick. And I played really well, and I lost 6-6. But that was probably the coolest thing ever. I was at the coin toss. I was like, dude, I'm playing Novak. What's going on?
Are you a guy that, like, do you set, like, a goal necessarily? Like, at the end of the year, do you want to make sure you're, like, inside top 30 or seated in Australia? Or are you just kind of like me, I just, oh, let's just play well and see where we end up?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have goals. I'm kind of one of those weird guys that don't like to talk about my goals. But yeah, being seeded Australian Open would be great.
But is that like a ranking thing? Or I mean, like, or in general, is that just like overall, like forehand or backhand or serve or, you know, something game related?
No, I mean, obviously all those things I need to improve on. But like the ranking thing, I have a certain number I want to get to, but I don't like to talk about it. And, you know, to be honest,
we're going to assume it's one.
Yeah, we'll assume it's one.
Unless you blink twice, it's one.
It's not one. It's got more than one digit. I'll give you that. It's got more than one digit. But
all right, we're going to move on. We got, these are kind of like quick buzzer questions that you we're going to hit you with. Who's the most annoying player to play on the tour?
I'm going to say Jordan Thompson because I'm 0-3 and he's kind of my daddy.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Who's the most intimidating player on tour to you? Like not necessarily playing, but like that you're not going to go ask to practice with.
I think I would say Sinner. I mean, the guy is just like, he's not like mean or anything. He's not like trying to be intimidating. He just is. No.
Are you confident enough, like at a tournament, like next week in Shanghai, if you see him on like a Tuesday, be like, hey, do you want to practice tomorrow? Or are you not there yet?
I'm not with him. No, I'm not there yet.
I had that. Stevie, what about, I don't think I ever once asked like Roger, Rafa, or Novak to practice. Like I practiced with them, but they would always have to come to me.
It was like, you need to be there at 8 a.m. and show up.
I could totally see Sam going up and be like, hey, Raj, let's practice tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Let's do it.
No way.
I could totally see you doing that.
Yeah.
I didn't have that in me. All right. Who's the most famous like player contact in your phone, if you can say?
I mean.
We know you have Andre's number now.
Yeah. Probably Agassi. Yeah.
Is this the worst interview you've ever had on the tour with us?
I haven't done too many interviews. So, yeah.
Oh, man, we're getting better.
All right, Jordan Thompson's the most annoying or toughest player. Is there a player that you kind of own that you're like you 3-0, 4-1 kind of thing against?
I'm 3-0 against Jerry Shang, and I'm 3-0 against Kovacevic. And I think there's one more guy I'm 3-0 against because 3-0 is like daddy.
3-0, yeah, yeah.
3-0s, that's key.
I'm 0-2 on a couple guys. But, yeah, I'm trying to think. I think I have 3-0 on one more person, but I have 3-0 on Tsitsipas.
Oh, okay. That's the real deal right there.
That's a big one.
I got him 3 times in a row. Yeah.
In your young career, is there a city or tournament that like just doesn't feel right to you?
I mean, Mets 250. Last year it was tough. This is the last year they're going to have it. I mean, I was just there in November. I didn't see the sun the whole week. And I was like, man, this place.
I played it once.
Really? It's not the place to be,
is it? It's not the place to be. Yeah. You have all right, it's not the place to be. What's your favorite tournament? Not a major, not a master series.
I mean, Tokyo.
Oh.
Easy.
Even though you just lost first round of singles and doubles?
I just got routed, but I love it here. It's incredible.
It's a great, look, Tokyo's a great, do you play for the love of the game or would you rather have the paycheck in Beijing?
I play for the love of the game, dude.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you.
Aren't you two just little holy saints?
That's what we do in Southern Cal.
Money's nice, but Tokyo, you know, experiences are what's more important, Sam? You got experiences, money, like, you know.
I played both. I'd rather go to Beijing.
Dude, I'm not gonna say anything. I'm not gonna say anything.
All right, you're in Tokyo. All right, would you rather win one U.S. Open title or two Australian Open titles?
One U.S. Open, no brainer.
Where does that become like, all right, would you rather win 5 Australian or one U.S. Open?
Yeah, yeah, 5.
I'd rather, definitely 5. I would even go 3 Aussies.
You take 3 Aussies over one U.S.?
I think 3, yeah. I do 3 as well.
Yeah, I think 3, yeah. I would take one U.S. Open over 2 Aussies. I would take 3 Aussies over one U.S. Open.
I think you're right. 3 is where you draw the line.
That's where you got to draw the line.
3 is a lot.
Are you going to play one of the 4 of us for your life? Who are you most confident in beating? All in our prime.
Jack.
That was quick. That was quick to answer what you got.
I never played either of you, but like, I mean, Jack's probably got the worst backhand, right? Or I mean, but Stevie, your chip was a joke, and like, I don't love handling the chip. I don't love handling the chip, so you would have diced me, I think. And Sam serves well, and like, obviously John serves well, so I'm gonna go with Jack. That was a little quick. He's probably gonna be mad that I said that quick.
Hey, that's all right.
I got one more. If you wanted, you can't take John's serve, but you got to take one more shot from the collective group of the 4 of us. What the shot you're taking?
Can I take your serve? Aren't you like top 10 in aces all the time?
Yeah, I can't take my serve either.
Okay, can't take a serve. Ooh, I might go with the Stevie J forehand then. Because I need all the help I can get on the forehand.
I'd want the Stevie J backhand chip.
What? You guys don't understand. You don't want like my chip. You want to just have a backhand. It's pretty simple. Like, yeah, I had to use the chip out of necessity. If I had a backhand, I would not have used the chip.
I heard you just never wanted to, like, learn to, like, hit a two-hander. Is that true?
That's not true. I spent years of my life trying to craft that side, and I have just the yips and a mental block.
Yeah, it was always stupid when people were like, why doesn't Stevie work on his backhand? You idiots, what do you think he does every single day? At some point, it just doesn't click, right?
No, now when people ask me that, I just go, I didn't think of that for the last 20 years. Yeah, I just...
should have worked on it.
Yeah, should have worked on it. All right, Alex.
Well, your chip is dirty. Well, yeah.
It is dirty, but I got one more little story for us here. I want to see if you remember this before we let you go. This is 2020-ish, maybe 2021. You are how old?
In 21, I'm probably 16. I'm 16.
So he's young. So look, Alex and I practiced with Alex a lot, you know, during those times. He was in Orange County, California. My coach was down there, Mark Lucero. We hit a bunch. There was one day at Palisades Tennis Club, okay, you know, whatever time it was. And so Alex is young. We're practicing. We're having a good hit. I'm trying to play points, but I'm like, you know, I'm going to serve wide on the deuce and we'll start the point out because I'm just working on specific things, right? We get to the ad. I'm like, all right, I'm going to serve wide and we'll play it out, you know, kind of games to 11, just serving wide. Alex goes and hits a return backhand return winner like he does always because he's got a great backhand. But he's like the whole time, you know, he says it like two or three times, hits a return winner and he just goes, oof, Novak. And Mark and I kind of look at each other and I'm like, what the is this kid talking about right now? Sorry for my swearing, but I'm like, what is he talking about? I'm telling him where I'm going and he's just roping return winners, like, which is what he's supposed to do, but he's like muttering under his breath. He's like, oof, Novak. But ultimately I had to give, I and Mark Lucero can chime in because this will be a social clip, I'm sure. I had to give Alex like a 6-week break from practice. I was like, I'm not hitting him for like at least a month. It's like he's getting put on the bench until like I'm okay with going back out there. But do you remember that? And why did you do that?
I don't remember that, but like that's something that I would for sure have done. For sure. Like when I was like practicing all my boys, like I hit a back and I'm like, dude, I'm like Novak. Like, yeah, that was for sure something that I would say. I don't remember that. And I don't remember you being pissed about it either. I don't know.
No, we finished the practice, it was good, but I just told Mark, I was like, I'm gonna need a month probably, and then we'll come back.
I mean, like, did 16-year-old me really piss you off that much?
No, I was like, who is this guy think he is? I'm telling him where I'm going and he's hitting return winners and like, he's just saying Novak. Like he could have just hit the return winner. Like, don't be that guy.
Yeah, I guess I was being that guy. I'm sorry.
But it was, ultimately, I had a good laugh. Mark and I probably text about that quite frequently. If we're watching like one of your matches or you hit a backhand winner, I'll just like text him a clip and be like, oof, Novak. We have a good laugh. I had a good laugh at the time. I just had to, like, you know, you're 16, you're still young. I had to, like, you know, I had to put you on the bench for a month.
Man, I don't remember, like, that's what I would say. I don't know. I can't believe I said that when I was hitting with you. Like, I don't know why I would do that.
Secretly, deep down, I probably liked it because, like, you want to have a confident kid out there. And, like, that should have been all that I needed to know that you were going to be a very good tennis player. And it's all worked out very well.
Yeah, well, if I had Novak's backhand, I might be ranked a little higher. But, you know, I can be delusional. I can be delusional.
All right, dude. Well, we appreciate you taking the time over in Tokyo. Good luck over in Shanghai next week and the rest of the season, man. Thanks for coming on. Congrats on top 30. We're men of our words here. You earned it. You earned this spot on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to Alex for joining us. He joined us after a first-round loss in Tokyo, by the way. So big props to him for coming on after that. Hopefully he lights it up in Shanghai and the rest of the year. But again, good luck to Alex Mickelson the rest of the year. All right, everyone, that's the Friday episode. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Alex Mickelson. We'll be back Monday to talk more Shanghai results. Have a good weekend. See you then.